When I make videos now, it's like I think of, you know, one or two or three people, like, okay, I'm making this video for this group over here, because, you know, that's who my audience, that's my core audience. You know, and if other people watch too, great, but this is my audience. And so yeah, you want to be able to serve your audience properly.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Hive Podcast, episode 2 of season 3. We are rocking and rolling. So excited to have this guest back, to have you guys back listening to the episode. You're in store for a good one. Let's welcome back to the show, Sydney Dionzen. Sydney, what's up, man?
Hey, good to be back, man. It's been a while,
yeah,
hasn't it?
2 years. I was looking before we jumped on this call. You were on the show July of 2020, so just over 2 years ago. Lots changed for you.
A lot has changed. That was the year I went full-time.
Yeah.
Content creator, 2020. The best timing ever, because I went full-time when the lockdowns happened. Perfect, right?
Yeah, that's good timing. It's good timing, yeah, as a content creator. A little scary because I went freelance full-time right before that, like November, December 2019. Uh-huh. And so during lockdown, like, that's a little scary because there's no work going on. But I found myself doing a lot of real estate, and real estate like took off during that time, and photos and video became more important because people couldn't necessarily go look at places all the time. So it worked out.
All right. So you did very well then.
Yeah. Yeah. And like continues to do well, you know, you make a name for yourself, and real estate's all referral based. So it's been great, but we're not going to talk about me. We're talking
about
you.
That's awesome, man.
So you went full-time in 2020. You were on the show in July. We talked about that. You had just hit like 100K subscribers on YouTube, which is huge. And so we were talking before I hit record that this show up until now has always talked about like getting started and what it took for someone like you, like when you were back on the show, to get started and get to that 100K and that march to like that full-time YouTuber status where you could just make your living doing what you love on YouTube. But now I'm transitioning the show talking about what are the struggles that you face along the way. I mean, it's you see just the highlights essentially on YouTube and Instagram. You don't see the behind the scenes of the struggles that it took to get to where you're at now. And you're doing a lot of amazing things now. We're going to dive into that. But I guess right off the bat, what were some of the biggest struggles when you decided to go full-time right off the bat? I'm sure there's, you know, family life and finding that balance at home. And then, I don't know, was it scary, like income-wise, like making a full-time living?
The hardest part about switching from a full-time 9-to-5 job to becoming a full-time content creator is just all the admin stuff about running a business. Because you are running a business, you know, you're not just making fun videos and taking photos or whatever, like it's... That's part of it. I'd probably say that's maybe 25% of the job, but 50% of the job is the actual running of the business, getting health insurance for your family, trying to figure out what kind of business you want to run, whether it's incorporation, LLC, whatever, all that stuff you have to do while making content. And so a lot of people may look at the glamorous side of becoming a content creator. And that's where editing comes in. But really, like you're a business person. You are a producer. You're a writer. You're a graphic designer, a marketer, a copywriter. Like you're all these things. You're wearing a bunch of these hats that a lot of people don't see. And so I say, just all the admin stuff, just the day to day running a business is probably the hardest part for me. Mainly because I'm not necessarily a business person. Well, I am technically, but you know, I'm not naturally gifted at running a business, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of running that day in, day out, also trying to be creative and becoming a full-time creator. It's just the admin stuff, man. It's just so hard.
So did you find that you were at first trying to juggle that on top of everything, or did you immediately see a need that like, I need to have an admin day? Or is that even realistic because stuff just constantly comes up?
I discovered having an admin day later down the road. At first I was like, okay, I'm just going to do a bunch of these things right off the bat. You want to try to accomplish as many tasks as possible, you know, like, oh, I'm going to film a video here. All right. After that, I'm going to edit right away. And then in the last 2 hours of my day, I'll do admin. That never works out. I mean, you know, as well as I do, like when you're filming videos, they always take longer than expected.
100%. Right?
And so, I later down the road, I figured out, okay, maybe I should designate my days like Monday to Thursdays. Those are my, you know, creative production days. And then Fridays are just going to be strictly admin. where I can just focus on just that. And so, yeah, it took a while to learn. But, you know, that's what happens when you're growing a business. You kind of figure out all these problems that arise, and you as a business person got to figure out how to solve those problems. You are the CEO, and you got to figure out how to fix those problems, you know?
So what was it, trial by error, or did you have like a resource, like a community that you could reach out to within the YouTube sphere of other content creators? That was there someone that like kind of gave you advice and kind of helped you like, hey, why don't you try doing this if this isn't working out for you?
Half of it, I'd probably say, was trial by error for sure. But then there are a lot of resources, a lot of business savvy content creators that kind of helped me along the way, like Roberto Blake. He's a great resource. You know, we have this private group DM that we're a part of that we just kind of ask each other questions and stuff like that. So he's been a great help for me. I'm just watching videos out there that are online, free for anyone to watch, were also helpful. But I find like just asking questions to a person that has done it, well, has probably been like the best resource for me. But also trial by error is one of the best things you can do, because just like filmmaking, you're not gonna get it right the first time. You know what I mean? Like, you're gonna figure things out as you film. And once you figure those things out, okay, I learned a new life skill. Great, I'm gonna use that for my next production. Same thing running a business. Whoa, just a problem ahead of me. Oh, cool. I solved it. Great. I'm going to carry that solution to the next task or whatever. And so, yeah, you just kind of, you grow as you run a business, as you make content.
Yeah. I can see how it could be difficult when you work for like a company. There's, you know, best practices in place. There's the employee handbook, and this is what we do, and yeah, this is how we do it. And then when you start working for yourself, whether it's a creative endeavor or a freelance endeavor, there is no best practices. There is no employee handbook right off the bat. You got to create your own. And it really shows how motivated and determined you are, because once you find out what works, you got to hold yourself accountable and hold yourself like to that standard moving forward. And it's not always the easiest thing, I found.
It's not the easiest. And like everything is on me, you know. I got a family to support. I got a wife, got three kids, you know, got a house to pay off, put food on the table. And so there's a lot of pressure, you know, that's on my shoulders. But you know what, that's just the risks that you're going to have to take. And, you know, if you want to be a full-time content creator, if you want to run a business, like, those are the things that you have to be willing to take on.
Yeah. So when you became full-time, you went from having to go to work every day to probably walking down the hallway to your office every day to do work. How was that initially? I'm sure it was great, and it felt great initially, and it probably still does. But how did you manage that work-life balance with kids at home, a wife at home, and having to get in full days to be able to make this content, to get out? Because if you're not pumping out content, there's no income coming in.
It was great for the first year, like just to walk into my office and just to, you know, put my head down, get to work. Like, that was great. Until we had another baby. Babies are loud. And the plan was to put all the kids in one room right next to my office, right? And got a bunk bed for my two older kids and then a crib for my baby. Turns out my third baby just didn't like the other kids. She's loud. She wants her own space. So I had no choice but to find another office that's pretty close to my house, just so I can have a quiet space. But yeah, like, if you have older kids, it's a lot easier. But, you know, when you have a really young baby, like, it's kind of hard to film in a quiet space, especially if they're crying and you need to be quiet. And it's very difficult to juggle all those things. You know what I mean? Plus all the gear that's been, you know, being mailed to me, it's like, where do I put this stuff? We have baby stuff everywhere. Like, there's no space in this house, you know? And so recently I moved into this office space, where I have a dedicated space to film. I don't have to worry about, like, you know, loud kids or whatever. I can just focus on creating and, you know, doing what I have to do. And what's great about that is that, you know, when I clock out here, I'm not carrying the work when I'm at home. Mm-hmm. Where when I had an office at home, it was hard for me to mentally clock out because, you know, my computer was there, my gear was there. So it's like, I always was working, and I was very tempted to just sneak in a, you know, 15 minute, you know, editing session over here when I should be spending that time with my wife and kids. And so for me, that was very, very difficult just to balance all that. But I feel since moving here, I'm able to separate that. Like, once I clock out here, like, I'm tired, I'm done. I want to go play PlayStation with my kids. I want to have fun and, you know, go on hikes with my family, do all that fun stuff. Like, I can actually mentally clock out. But, you know, that's me. I know it's different for everybody, and everyone has different circumstances. Not everyone has three kids, you know. Yeah. Some have none, some have two, some have, you know, whatever, or just two dogs. And it's going to be different for everybody. And so I feel like if you are in a circumstance and it's not working for you as a content creator slash business person, try something. Try something until it eventually works out. You can't just keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result will happen. You know, that's just absolutely crazy. And so for me, it's just, you just have to make a decision. And I feel making decisions is probably the best attribute as a business person to have. I mean, I definitely learned that the first 2 years. And if you don't make decisions right away, then, you know, you're just going to keep going in a circle and you're just going to go crazy.
That's such good advice. Like, don't repeat the same thing if it's not working. And that's easy to do when you work for yourself and you're a freelancer and you're, you know, a team of one. It's very easy just to keep repeating the same thing because you don't want to change. But having to make that decision and make it quickly. And like you said, just try something. If it's not working, it's not working. So trying something, if it doesn't work, you're in the same spot that you were in before, or maybe it does and you get a little better. I love working from home. I did the co-working space right when like the pandemic started. It was great. It's good for like a change of scenery, and I'll do it occasionally. I found myself being a little bit more productive at home for whatever reason, but like everybody finds their own way. I love it. I love having a home office. And it feels cramped like in a co-working space. You only have so much room in a co-working space unless you want to work like with everybody. And when you're like content creating, I don't feel comfortable creating content around a ton of people. I know from hanging out with Sid, he feels perfectly comfortable doing it when we were shooting pictures down at Sunset Cliffs when you were out. That was a blast. Yeah. Well, I guess my next question would be, you know, kind of how did you handle that from like, I guess kind of diving into the weeds, accounting wise and like income wise going full time? I'm sure it was a little scary. And you hear people say this all the time, like, don't put all your eggs in one basket. So I have to assume all your income wasn't coming straight from YouTube. And I think a lot of people have that misconception when they go full time, like, all my money's coming from YouTube. But how important was it for you to figure out additional revenue streams so you could go full time?
I did that beforehand. I had a goal where once I crossed 100,000 subscribers, that would be the time for me to reevaluate where I was in life, how I was doing financially, where we were at as a family. Like, is that that was like the marker for us to decide, okay, should I go full-time or not? And prior to that, I had to work my way towards that. And so before I made the decision to go full-time as a content creator, I made sure to have multiple streams of income, you know, whether it's additional client work or selling digital assets online, selling merch, selling courses, stuff like that. You know, I had to make sure to look into those revenues just to make a bit of money, and of course sponsorships. And a lot of people think that, you know, most of content creators' incomes come from YouTube, and probably for the top elite, but you know, it's probably the least amount of money where I get my income from. Like, it's probably maybe, I don't know, 20% of what I make total. You know, a lot of it is from those digital sales courses, sponsorships, and stuff like that, and client work. And so it's definitely not wise to think that you're going to get all your money from YouTube if people decide to become a full-time content creator. You got to work your butt off, you know, to even make that 20% of your income, you know what I mean? But you know, it's always good advice to diversify your income. You know, never rely on just one source, because like, what if YouTube were to be bought out by TikTok and then TikTok changes it completely? You know what I mean? That'll never happen. But like, what if it does? Well, that sucks for us, because like, our livelihood was dependent on that one platform, you know? And recently I started getting into Reels, and I know a lot of people have been hating on Instagram, but you know, I have been loving Reels, and I started getting sponsorship brand deals through Reels. And so, yeah, that's another form of revenue for me, just in case in the small percentage that happens that YouTube doesn't work out in the end.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. Because that 100K number, it's not as important now as it used to be, I don't think. And it's not necessarily like, that's what you got to hit to go full time, because having the multiple streams of revenue is far more important than your subscriber number. We've seen a lot of people go full time in YouTube. I mean, my buddy Tom Buck, he just hit 100K, but he's been full-time for a year. That's because, you know, diversified and has multiple revenues of income coming in that allows you to go full time. So it's not necessarily the subscriber number. It's how you can have that income coming in, of course. So great advice, man. Great advice. So we've talked about kind of the struggles, kind of the headaches, the admin that you weren't expecting to have to deal with going full time, because you work with, when you work for an employer, that's all taken care of. You just come and do your job. Now you got to do everything. But you've had a lot of successes. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the successes that you had going full time. I wanted to share with you one of the best decisions and investments I've ever made as a content creator. Nothing has impacted the quality of what I create and how I create as much as Ecamm has. Ecamm is the leading all-in-one live streaming production platform built for Mac. But let me tell you, it is so much more than that. You actually don't even need to live stream with Ecamm. You can use its powerful production platform like I do to record videos and podcasts to ease the burden of post-production. Ecamm supports multiple camera inputs, camera LUTs, and color correction. You can build in scenes, overlays, text, widgets, and sound. The ability to bring on remote guests and record multi-track audio has been huge for this podcast. Oh, and I almost forgot, Ecamm allows you to stream and record in 4K. Good luck finding another application that lets you do that. Rather than being a cloud-based application, which, let's be honest, usually spits out junk, Ecamm is an application on your Mac, leveraging your computer's processing power rather than some remote server, ensuring you get the most power and the best quality. From beginners to experts, from content creators to businesses, thousands trust Ecamm to power their video productions. Use the link in the show notes or the description of the video to download Ecamm and try a 14-day free trial. Use code JARED15 at checkout if you decide to purchase to receive 15% off. Trust me, your future self is going to thank you. All right, Sydney. So up until now, we've talked about those struggles. Let's talk about the successes, because there's been a lot of successes for you over the last 2 years, a ton of brand partnerships, probably brands you dreamed of working with. And like, it was like the pie in the sky. Like, if this ever happened, this would be amazing. And I know that's kind of happened for you, right? What are some of the successes you've had going full time? And did you know how to handle that success at first?
So I've had experience working with brands and trying to negotiate prior to me deciding to go full time as a content creator. And so, you know, I've had relationships with brands like Polar Pro, Sony, Google, all that stuff. But I wanted to make an intentional decision to negotiate multi-month deals, you know, not just one-off deals, say for one YouTube video, you know, 6-second integration, you know, X amount of money, or for a full dedicated video, X amount of money, whatever. It's like, okay, well, that's fine and all, but I feel like the more my audience sees your brand, the more value it's going to bring to that brand. So I started negotiating, hey, what does a 3-month sponsorship look like? You know, what does a whole year sponsorship look like? And so on the brand deal side, that's what I started to do. But then because I've made really good relationships with big brands like Sony, they were planning to do this web series where they wanted to showcase their new products, not just Sony cameras, but all Sony. So Sony electronics, TVs, headphones, all that stuff. And so they wanted to do a show called The Lowdown. And they were looking for two co-hosts just to talk about it, geek out about these products. And funny enough, they just chose me out of all the content creators that they could have chosen. They chose me and my friend Azaric to host together. And it's been such a wild ride. We're currently on season 2, and we've been to New York. We mostly film in San Diego. We're going to go back to San Diego in a month and film some really cool stuff. But yeah, it's been really cool hosting an actual show for Sony and just talking about things that I love outside of cameras. So that's been a huge thing for me. And so, yeah, another stream of income for me, but not just, you know, as a content creator, but like, you know, this is an actual TV show. We get to negotiate things on a per season basis. So it's like, this is kind of cool. It's like leveling up for me. So I'm really excited about that. If you want to check it out, Lowdown, I'm sure links will be down below. Yep. But yeah, things like that, just looking for opportunities outside of YouTube has really piqued my interest, because, YouTube is not where my entire space is at. I love YouTube. I adore YouTube. I love my audience so much, but I also love other things too. I love motorsport. I love cars, recently I've been working with Volkswagen and, just doing stuff for them. And, so kind of exploring different revenues just based on the passions that I already have. And it's almost kind of one of those things where it's like, all right, well, what's on my bucket list? I've done a lot of things, and I feel like as a YouTuber, reaching that 100K almost kind of like ticks that box for me. Like, sure, the next goal will be 1 million. That's great. That might happen one day. Whatever, but like, I feel like after you reach 100,000, it's like, okay, cool. What else is out there? Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's like, you live life once. Like, you want to explore different things. You want to pursue passions that you haven't really pursued yet. And so for me, I'm in an exploratory phase. I didn't know I loved hosting. I love hosting a lot, especially on a show like The Lowdown. And so yeah, just exploring more what that looks like and just having an absolute blast doing it all.
So doing the show, I got to ask, do you like being in front of the camera more, or do you like doing some of the behind the scenes creative stuff a little bit more?
It's so hard. Okay. So Jen and I always talk about this. It's like, we love being behind and in front of the camera. Like, we're used to that, but because we're mostly in our studios filming by ourselves, we immediately want to, fix a camera angle or fix lighting.
It's gonna
or,
be hard.
saying certain things, knowing how you're going to edit it. But then it's like, no. You have to trust the crew. You have to trust the editor that they're going to edit it right and all that stuff. And so, but at the same time, it's kind of cool. You go into work and you film for, 6-8 hours, and then that's it. You don't have to worry about editing. And so that's the nice part about doing the show. But again, you just have this innate desire to like, oh, let me adjust this here. Let me do this over here. Let me add an ND filter here. I got an extra camera. Do you want that? But that's just because, we want the best for the show. And, that's just going to be me. I'm always going to want to help. And so yeah, even now, like doing season 2, I still have the desire to like, let me just edit this for you. Let me just do this for you.
Do you find that because you have all this experience behind the scenes that it's helped the production run a little bit smoother for you being in front of the camera, just because you kind of know what's going on with the crew behind the camera?
100%. And I think because of that, and I think probably one of the reasons why they hired Jenna and myself is that they wanted to use our experience as content creators to help them make content that's relatable to the masses, not just, camera settings or whatever, mm-hmm. but we now have a good relationship where they're asking us like, all right, we want to make a reel. How do we do this? What can we do together? And I love that. It's not one of those gigs where a brand tells you what to do or what to say, whatever. But, Sony really does want to partner with us so that we can create the best content together. So we're working, collaborating on ideas. So we have this bi-monthly call where we just chat creative ideas and what to do in the future and, just dreaming big. So definitely a lot of big things happening in upcoming episodes of Lowdown, lots of episodes giving back to the community, which I'm really excited about. And so it's nice to have that partnership, with a big brand like Sony.
That's awesome. For me, it would be a little tough, like knowing that you recorded all these episodes. Cause I know when you guys come to town, you don't just record one, like you try to bust out a bunch of content, right? Like, it's got to be hard recording all that content and then having to wait for it to come out. Because as your own content creator, you're in charge of like the production schedule and getting that out. It would drive me nuts because you get that gratification when you release it. And now you make all this stuff and you got to wait. it's got to get on your nerves a little bit. Like, it's got to be, I want to see it.
Yeah, it is. But also not, because it's like we filmed a bunch of content in New York about 2 months ago. None of that content has come out yet. It'll probably will come out in the next few weeks ago. And I completely forgot we were in New York. Like, oh yeah, we did film some stuff in New York. That's crazy. But, just knowing that there's content coming out every week, sometimes 2 videos a week, it's just kind of cool because we're batch capturing it, I guess, in a way. And we've changed our format where season 1 used to be like these long 15, 18 minute episodes. And we weren't sure if they were working out or not. So now we've broken it down. It's like bite-sized content, 3 minute videos, 5 minute videos, but more frequent. And so I feel like that format is a lot better. So there's a lot of content coming out from our trip to New York. And I think even from LA, just a lot of stuff. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff coming out. But yeah, it's kind of nice to know that there is videos coming out where we're not pressured to film this week, expecting for them to post a video the following week, because it's a big production.
Yeah.
You know, like there's probably like a handful of crew members. There's us. And then there's, I mean, it's a proper show, like hair, makeup, all that stuff, travel. Like it's absolutely crazy that we get to do this. And so for them to produce this much videos in the little time that we have, because they're basing their production schedule off my schedule, off Jenna's schedule, it's kind of hard to coordinate all together. And so it is kind of nice to know that all I have to do is just focus on hosting, and all they have to do is worry about filming and editing. And so yeah, it's a good team effort.
Was that your first time working on a set that big, a production that big?
No, I mean, back in film school, we'd, you know, work on similar size sets, and I used to work, you know, in studios on movie sets and TV shows. And so I was very familiar with being on set. And so that was probably an advantage that I had, just kind of being comfortable on set. But I think the worry that I had, well, maybe not a worry, but maybe just wasn't sure if the dynamics between Jenna and myself were going to go well, because we're friends behind the scenes. But even if working with friends, that may not work well on camera. But fortunately, it does work well for us. And we just have an absolute blast just working with each other.
That's awesome. You dropped a really good knowledge bomb, some good advice when we first started talking about this. And it was when brands reach out, instead of just doing like the one-off sponsorship video or one-off like gig or video for them, whatever it is, try to negotiate or bring up doing a multi-video, multi-like level partnership. Kind of walk the listeners through that. Was that something that, you know, these different brands came to you, or was it something that you started to, you know, roll out to brands and say, hey, instead of doing the one video, why don't we do a larger partnership? Why don't we do a few videos? Why don't we do a sponsorship on, you know, multiple products you have coming out? Is that something that you've kind of rolled out to different brands that you worked with? And what was the process, that communication process?
I guess that it kind of started probably a couple of years ago when I started getting brand deals for two videos instead of just one, right? And so the idea of having a multi brand deal wasn't necessarily new, but it was actually from my good friend Brandon Lee. He has a YouTube channel called This Is Tech Today. He's very savvy. Like, he's a very business savvy kind of person, and he was actually the one that taught me that you should have multi-month deals with brands, and also educating them why, and showing them the analytics, saying the value that they would get by having all these videos in a 3 months, 6 months, or even a 12 months span versus one, that the brand would get the better end of the deal because they're seeing their product, their service multiple times. It's called brand awareness. And so when he taught me that, taught me how to use my analytics to bring them value, that's when I started getting the confidence to negotiate with brands. Say, hey, that's great, we can do this one-off deal, but what if we did this? Or what would it look like if we did this? And I think the reason why this isn't happening is because there isn't enough education on the brands themselves. They just think, all right, we have this big marketing budget, let's just reach out to X many creators. You know, this person will be 5,000, this person will be 10,000, this whatever the negotiations will be. But not many people realize that if you don't have brand awareness in a longer period of time, then the campaigns that they're trying to do aren't going to be as effective. You know what I mean? Like, sorry. Can I have a water? Drink of water?
Yeah, of course. You can do whatever you want on this show, man. If you need a drink of water. I think that's that.
I'm like swallowing my spit.
Do whatever you need to. This is a very laid back show, man. I've been drinking my cup of juice over here. It's great advice, because I came from a marketing background from the beer industry before I went full-time freelance. And brand awareness is so important. You can't just run one ad or one sponsorship video and expect that to be enough to hold people's attention. You need multiple. So like when we would do, you know, picking what billboards we wanted beer ads on, or what magazines and where in the magazine we would want that ad. Once you did that, you signed a contract to have that specific billboard run multiple different ads for, you know, 6 months, a quarter, half, you know, a year. Same thing with the magazine. Quarterly, we would review, is that a good spot for it? And you want that always in there because they might flip through it a bunch of times and miss it, but then see it that one time. And then again, when they see it again in another magazine, and again and again and again, and it's that brand awareness. And so when you see it at the store, you're like, oh, hey, I've been seeing that. Like, I'm going to grab that six pack. Same thing when you go to the camera store, or you're on B&H, like, hey, that ZV-1, Sid's been making a ton of videos about that. The thing looks cool. I really want that. And so when it goes on sale, hey, I'm grabbing that. So great advice.
Yeah. And again, a lot of it is education. Not many brands like realize the importance of brand awareness and the longevity of a longer period of time for campaigns. You know, you may do a deal, you know, Q2, July or whatever it is. But, you know, that's not necessarily the best time for sales. People are on vacation. They're not really paying attention to that kind of stuff. But, you know, Q3, Q4, you know, when the holiday season is kicking off, you know, people will tend to see a spike, or brands tend to see a spike in sales because it is a time to buy. And so that's why it's good to do longer periods of time when it comes to brand deals, because you get to see what the stats look like Q1, Q2, Q3, and Q4.
Absolutely.
And so yeah. And again, a lot of it's knowing what your stats are, what value you can bring to them. And sometimes you'll get like really bad offers where, you know, a brand can come up to you and say, hey, we'll offer you this amount of money, but you have to guarantee us, you know, 10,000 views. You
can't control that.
That's not the way to do it. You can't control that. And just because a video gets 10,000 doesn't mean that the product linked in the video is going to get 10,000 clicks. You know, you could have a video that hits 500 views, but then 20,000, you know, clicks on the link. Like you just don't know. But that's why it's good to have that brand awareness and educating that brand. And once they're educated and they feel confident in you, they're going to think like, oh, wow, this person really cares. I get it. I understand now. Okay, let's feed more of our marketing budget to this creator, and let's do a 3-month campaign. And so yeah. And again, you're dealing with another person, you know, you're not dealing with a robot. Like, you know, you want to educate the person, let them know. And if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, that's okay. Move on to the next deal.
And like you just said, I think having those conversations with brands helps them see that you're in it too. Like you're invested and you're someone that they want to work with, because you're educating them too on your side. They don't know about the content you create and the effort that goes into it and the quality. So you got to educate them on that, and you got to educate them how your content can help them. Really, you're selling the brand, not the brand selling you. But at the same time, it needs to be a collaborative effort. And then going on to the quarter, like long-term sponsorships into different quarters, if I can add on to that, when you're doing sponsorships, keep in mind that your videos that you release in quarter 3 and quarter 4 are much more valuable than the videos you release in quarter 1 yep. and quarter 2. So if you're doing a sponsorship,
1,000%,
your videos in quarter 3 and quarter 4 should be a higher sponsorship than your, you know, early on videos, because it's the holiday shopping season. So those videos are worth far more money to the brand than, you know, in February.
Yeah. And people shouldn't be afraid to negotiate or even like put up a dollar value. Like just try it. You know, if you feel a certain number in your head, you know, say for example, like, okay, if a brand reaches out for a 60-second integration, okay, maybe I guess a number that runs in my head, $1,500, try it out. If you feel like it's $3,000, try it out. Just talk, you know, you're dealing with another human person. Just communicate, just talk, and see what happens with that, you know?
Sydney, are there any good resources for anyone listening when it comes to trying to figure out brand sponsorships and numbers to negotiate? Is there a good starting point or a good resource where people can really dive into figuring out what their videos are worth for brands?
There's a lot of places. Well, one person, he has a course, well, not necessarily a course, but he has this program where he kind of educates people on how to negotiate with brands and knowing who your audience is. Because a lot of the times when you're making brand deals, the brand wants access to your audience. You need to know your audience, not just the demographics and where they're from, but you need to know that person's name, their hobbies, what they do in the morning, what they do as a job. Like they want to know that specific person so that it helps the brand market their campaign, their product, their service. You know what I mean? And so for content creators, you have to know your audience. And Liron Segev, he's a really good friend. He has a YouTube channel called This Techie Guy. Just a bunch of like, you know, tech tips, like how to set up your Wi-Fi properly, how to protect your computer, how to set up password managers, stuff like that. But, you know, he kind of coaches me every now and then. And he has this program where he kind of forces you to define who your audience is. And once you know who that audience is, like once you know who that exact person is, you can put a face to it, you can put a name to it, you can take that information and then you can present it to the brand and say, hey, Nike, this is my person. Here's why this person fits for your campaign. This person is young. This person is driven. This person loves the color red. You know, they might have a red shoe that they're promoting in the fall or whatever it is. You know what I mean? But knowing those specific details of your audience is going to help you negotiate those brand deals.
Yeah.
And, you know, the more informed you are, the more informed the brand's going to be. And believe it or not, when people feel more informed, they feel more confident when making decisions. And so when you're dealing with a $60,000 brand deal and both of you feel informed, there's going to be a handshake because there's going to be confidence between you and the brand. Both of you are going to be educated and both of you now have a goal to do this campaign with this much money at stake. But all that's based on the information that you have presented to the brand.
Yeah, it's so important to essentially put a pitch deck together about you and your brand, your channel, whatever you're having the brand sponsor, because being informed will not only allow you to come across as professional, because you're dealing with big professional brands, you need to come across professional, not just like, hey, yeah, I'll make a video. You know, like, you know, what's your target audience? What's the demographics? You know, when are people listening or watching? Whatever it is, if you need to have that information so you can relay that to the brand, you're going to come across professional, and it's just going to help you make better content when you know who your target audience is. So it's going to help you grow
absolutely.
As a content creator.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like when I make videos now, it's like I think of, you know, one or two or three people, like, okay, I'm making this video for this group over here because, you know, that's who that's my core audience. You know, and if other people watch too, great, but this is my audience. And so yeah, you want to be able to serve your audience properly.
Well, to kind of wrap things up, there's one last question I wanted to ask you because you brought it up earlier about how you have a ton of different interests outside of just cameras and content creation. Like you love cars and you've been able to work with Volkswagen a little bit. And this is a conversation I had in episode 1 of season 3 is how do you transition content? And not that you're transitioning your content, but when everyone knows Sydney as like you do a lot of stuff with cameras and camera backpacks and Sony cameras in particular, how do you start to trickle in some of the stuff that you love doing with the content that you're making to keep it interesting for you, even though you've based your audience and your growth off a specific topic? How do you start to integrate additional things into the channel?
That's a great question. So I like to think of it as like a tree, right? With branches. Your core content is the tree. Like for me, it's cameras, filmmaking. Like that's my core. That's my tree. If I can branch out to other things, but also include my core content, then you can kind of see a tie-in in a way. Like, you know, I'm getting into cars. Okay. The best way for me to tie it in is like, okay, how do I film a car race scene? Or what kind of camera should I put, you know, on a car that goes 200 miles an hour on the track or something like that? You know what I mean? So I'm still doing what I like. I'm kind of introducing my other interests to my audience, but I'm also entertaining my audience that came to my channel in the first place, and that's cameras. It's one of those things where you try. Sometimes your audience may like it. Sometimes they won't. Sometimes that kind of content is better on Instagram or on TikTok. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be on YouTube for sure. You can try it on YouTube. You can try it with shorts. But, you know, don't be afraid to try out those other things on other platforms because, you know, you never know if it hits or not.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I mean, doesn't matter how big you get on, you know, on whatever platform that you're focusing on. Try to experiment, keep things fresh, do what keeps you motivated. Maybe it'll work, maybe it doesn't, but at least you tried it and it's keeping you motivated. So I think that's great advice. And I love seeing-
You just gotta try.
I love seeing all the content you've been releasing, the Volkswagen when you went out like racing around a track that used like a 360 camera or something like that, if I remember the video right. Super cool. It was a blast.
360 camera. Yeah, it was so fun. Yeah, it was great. It was like, and I got to race a car for the first time in my life. It was great.
So, I mean, if your interest is coffee, brewing coffee different ways. I mean, how can you integrate camera stuff into brewing coffee. What kind of lens can really get really close and show like the bloom of the coffee brewing and just integrate it that way, guys? Just experiment. So, Sydney, it's been great catching up, man.
And have fun.
Have fun. It's the most important thing.
We
forgot to mention that. When you get started, remember to have fun because it can be stressful.
Just
all
have
the
fun,
admin
man.
Stuff, brand sponsorships. So yeah, have fun. Sydney, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming back on the show. It's been good to have you back on and catch up. And hopefully when you're back in San Diego, we can go shoot some photos again. It'd be a lot of fun.
We'll definitely hang out, man. Good to be here again.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hive Podcast. It was great catching up with Sydney. He's a great guy. Make sure you go check out his channel. If you love cameras, and even if you love seeing how cameras can be used to capture, you know, cars driving and all the other interests that Sydney has, make sure you go subscribe to his channel. It'll be linked down below, along with the Sony sponsorship that he's doing, the Lowdown. Really awesome. That'll be linked down below. Go check it out. As always, if you enjoy this video, make sure you give it a thumbs up. If you're listening in Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever your favorite podcast player of choice is, make sure you give it a 5-star rating and review the show. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you guys next week.